Welcome to your Spiritual Besties podcast. I'm Lauren Ledoux.
And I'm Rashida McCoy. We're here to laugh, cry, learn, and connect with you.
We discuss anything and everything from our everyday lives to the magical, mystical, and woo-woo.
So take a deep breath, grab a cup of tea,
and set an intention to receive, because you deserve it, bestie.
Hi, Rashida.
Lauren, how are you today?
I'm good. I just wanted to say that I think you look really beautiful. I love your dress.
Thank you, Lauren. I've been feeling this spring energy, and I'm like, let me embody that.
I'm in my grubby mom clothes right now, but I just bought a dress that's called a napping dress.
Okay.
Yeah. The company's called Hill House, I think, but I found out about it online. It kind of looks like what you're wearing, but it's like the coziest thing ever. And it's one of those things you could wear like pretty much anywhere, except maybe to like the gym or to yoga or something like that. But it's so cozy, like you could definitely sleep in it. So I'm feeling like that's going to be my summer uniform, and I'm really excited about it.
One, I need to look that up because that's amazing. And two, I think having a dress specifically designed for like all things is just, I don't know. I love a good dress. Just throw it on and nothing else if you don't want to, depending on your style and your vibe. But I love that, the napping dress. Yeah. I will look into that, Lauren.
Yes. Not sponsored, but this is my new thing. So I think we will get right into our convo today. We have a guest with us that I've been really excited to talk to for a while. We'll get into who she is and her story, but I've been really like not into social media whatsoever lately, or Instagram. I've pretty much been staying off, but I was lucky enough to be on and for our guest Brittany to just pop up onto my feed. Sometimes we hate the algorithm and sometimes we love it for these very reasons. And she has been really articulating these big, complex ideas in a way in like the shortened format of Instagram and Reels, which is a talent that I definitely envy, because I love like long form content. I have a really hard time making short form content that makes sense, but it's been really impactful. And I've been excited to have this conversation. So I'll go ahead and introduce Brittany. It's Brittany, and you know, Brittany Hartley. Hartley mm-hmm. Low, correct?
It's Low Hartley, but
Low
whatever.
Hartley. Okay. Yeah. And Brittany is an atheist director at No Nonsense Spirituality, which is her Instagram name, No Nonsense Spirituality. She has a master's degree in theology with a focus in the future of American religion. Britt has recently published a book titled No Nonsense Spirituality, All the Tools No Faith Required, which I love the title. and I can't wait to dive more into that. So welcome, Britt. We're so happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. Thanks, ladies.
Yeah, of course. We ask everyone this, and I'm really interested to know what your answer is.
I'm on the edge of my seat. I have no idea what this question is going to be.
Yeah. What is spirituality to you?
Great question. So to me, it's really about connection to your deepest self and connection to outside of self. And so for me, spirituality is really synonymous with the idea of connection. And for some people, that includes a higher power. So that outside of self is going to include beliefs about the universe or a god or something like that. And for me, it doesn't necessarily include that. For me, that's more just connection to life itself, connection to the human story. But yeah, for me, spirituality is just really about connection, and a lack of spirituality is when you feel numb kind of to yourself and kind of numb to the world around you. And that would be what I would feel is a lack of spirituality.
I love that answer so much. And I think, yeah, connection is something so many of us are missing these days. And I think we try to find it in a lot of different ways, but to truly find an authentic sense of connection where we feel connected to ourselves and connected to the world around us can take some work for sure. And I love that you speak to the different trappings that come with, I think, the seeking of that and what to look out for. Before we get into that, though, I would love to know your own story. Where did you start? I believe you grew up Mormon. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to start from the beginning.
Okay. I'll try to do a bird's eye view, try to do a flyby here. So I was raised Mormon, and then around 15, 16, really started to have some doubts about the Mormon religion, specifically around kind of some of the rules that I felt were arbitrary, for such a God to say things like, you know, no tattoos, no coffee, things like that for Mormons. And eventually made some choices that ended me up in being kicked out of my home at 16, which is really traumatic. And part of my desire to reconcile with my family was trying to find a way to make religion work, to make Christianity work, even to make Mormonism work, that there was something maybe deeper going on. So I really dove into Christian apologetics and found that there was more to religion than just kind of a list of rules that I was given as a teenager, that there was something here that was interesting. And it was enough for me to kind of be able to reconcile with my family. But I continued to deconstruct. So eventually I lost my faith in Mormonism, lost my faith in Christianity, lost my faith in God. I was in Christian seminary at the time, so I'm doing a master's degree program in theology. Because I've always been a curious mind. I've always been someone who was trying to make faith work, try to make it make sense. And so I went to school to be able to do that. And like so many who go to theology school, you realize that the Bible or certain doctrines or theologies are not what you thought they were when you're a kid and people tell you that the Bible is the word of God. So I ended up losing my faith and kind of got plunged into what we call nihilism, which is just nihilism as a philosophy is just the belief that there is no inherent meaning in the universe. But from the level of experience, it felt like I lost all my psychological anchors. I had lost God. I had lost free will. I had lost sense of self. I'd lost my community. I'd really lost all psychological and social anchors and was just kind of floating in what we call the void of just like, I don't even know up from down anymore. And yet I also have all this religious trauma from being a Mormon. And so everything in spirituality just felt like it had poison on it. Like I was just so allergic to that world because I'd been hurt and I'd been bamboozled. And so I was just stuck there for a while. And so for me, part of my journey kind of out of some of those darker spaces was really finding the science of spirituality, which helped me to feel safe enough to enter back into this world of ritual and awe and transcendence and embodiment, which we especially get from the female side of the conversation, and community and love and connection and mysticism and all of these things, that there was actually science behind a lot of these things where I didn't have to believe things that I just couldn't believe, but I could still access these tools. And so now, so personally, that was a journey of how do I get the tools without being forced to believe things that I just don't want to believe. I don't want to play that game anymore. And then I found that it wasn't just helpful for me. It was especially helpful for others who have been hurt by religion or others who tend to be more skeptical, people who kind of need that science side of things to feel safe enough to enter some of these places that can be considered woo. And so that's just kind of the work I do now is spirituality for the atheist, for the skeptical, for the deconstructioner, for the people who have religious trauma. It's essentially how can we get spiritual tools without requiring you to jump through hoops of having to believe things that we just don't know. So that's just kind of my story and my approach to spirituality now.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. I think one of the reasons I was drawn to your messaging is because I've gone through my own deconstructing process with evangelical Christianity as a teenager. And yeah, didn't go into nihilism necessarily, but definitely went like very into rationality and agnosticism of just like, how can we know anything? And it really is, it's earth-shattering in so many ways, and you put it really succinctly talking about, I think, the like psychological and social elements of this feeling of grief and loss that comes with that. And, you know, I wish back then that I would have been able to have access to teachers who could maybe connect me back to this feeling of connection without the dogma. And instead, you know, it has taken a couple of decades for me to really like figure out my own path, and it's still continually evolving. Okay, and just a little bit, babes. One of the things Rashida and I love asking people is, what is spirituality to them? Because it is totally different to every single person that we ask. And that's part of the beauty of it, that it isn't a specific path that's been prescribed and handed down to us. It's something for us to figure out on our own. So yeah, I appreciate your story so much. Rashida, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, no, I really love hearing Brittany's story, because no matter who we bring on the pod, I feel like we can see ourselves in each other. And I think that's really what this connection is all about. Especially like what we're meant to do here. We are individuals. In my opinion, we are individuals, but we are connected in some way. And being able to have compassion and seeing ourselves in each other's story is all a part of the process, part of this process. But I was really intrigued, Brittany, when you said that when you went to theology school, like the word, the Bible, wasn't exactly what we thought it is when we were growing up. And I just kind of would love to know a little bit about what you mean by that, because I too have been having some issues being older now, knowing that the Bible isn't this book that we've been given and told to read and follow and prescribe to the teachings that are in it, and really looking at it as a man-made, put together piece of work that was, you know, from things that were passed down orally, and also translated, and also different parts missing, and also there's not a lot of females in it, and also. So yeah, I would love to get like what it was for you that really was just like, dang, like what?
Yeah. So when I was younger, just like you, I just kind of was told that the Bible was this thing, you know, that God has given us, and it gives us direction, and it gives us objective morality so that we don't have moral relativity. And then I go into college and really study the Bible and realize that it's oral tradition, you know, on myth, on translation, on legend, on myth, on translation. And it really is just a mess. Like the whole thing is a mess. Now, are there stories that still inspire me? Absolutely. Are there stories about Jesus and parables that I say there's some wisdom teacher here that still is coming through in this parable? Absolutely. Is there benefit to reading a long form conversation, which is what the Bible is? This is a long form conversation about some of these deep human questions. Absolutely. But is it anything like objective morality, or, you know, given to us directly by God? Like you just can't justify that. Like we just know too much about these texts. And if we didn't have any identity wrapped up into our Bible or into our beliefs, it wouldn't be that big of a deal that, oh, maybe this King Arthur story is more mythic, more legend than real. If you tell people that, they, oh, that's great. We can still read the story. We can still read the story in school and glean from it. The difference with the Bible is it's holding on to a lot of other things. It's really, for a lot of people, it's their foundation for God. Believing that Jesus was resurrected is how they're avoiding death. And we know from terror management studies that our subconscious is always trying to avoid you know, avoid thinking about death. And so it's also your access to community. It's how you are processing things like grieving when someone dies. And so that belief isn't just a story like a King Arthur story that you learn is a myth, but it's okay. It's actually holding on to a lot of psychological anchors. So if you lose the Bible, you lose your faith, you lose God, you lose a lot of things with it. I lost my entire friends and family community.
Yeah.
I lost all of my rituals for coming of age, for grieving, for rites of passage. I lost sense of self. I lost identity. I lost belonging. I lost ritual. I lost spirituality. I really lost everything that it was tied to, which is why a faith crisis can be so hard for people and really lead someone into a dark night of the soul or even nihilism. It's because it's this anchor that's holding a lot of things. And it's also holding a lot of psychological monsters at bay, things like meaninglessness, isolation, death, things that we're trying to kind of run away from because they're so scary. That's all tied into kind of your beliefs around the Bible and God, because religion is keeping a lot of things at bay.
Oh man, I just had to take that in for a second. One, super confirming, lots of knowledge in everything you said. I'm really pinpointing how some of us that didn't even grow up super deep into religion, like, you know, I went to church every single Sunday with my family, and my grandfather was a minister and all the things, but it wasn't super deep when I was with just my mom and my dad, right? But still, having that background, I felt exactly what you were talking about. It's just like you lose your sense of self, and mm-hmm. to be tied that deeply to a book is very interesting for our culture. And so I wonder, do you think this is by design? You know, when we sometimes when we talk about the man or they, you know, mm-hmm. is it was that what it's supposed to be, to keep or check the masses in line? You know,
yeah,
I have theories about yeah. it, but I'd love to get your opinion on it.
There's certainly some element to that. Anyone who's in power who doesn't use religion is just not using all the tools that dictator or power structure, you know, can have at their disposal. And religion can be that. But what I usually like to also add to the conversation is that if all cults and all power structures and all leaders and all just all of that kind of went away today, the reality is we would recreate it tomorrow. Because there is something, so we have these four existential fears. This is the work of a guy named Irvin Yalom, who was a Buddhist psychoanalyst. And he talked about he really outlined the four existential fears that are kind of subconsciously guiding our behavior. So we've talked about three of them: isolation, meaninglessness, and death. But the fourth one is a fear of freedom. And the fear of freedom is this idea that actually we want a lot of freedom, but we actually get paralyzed when there's too much. And we actually are quite scared of, oh my God, I am responsible for my life and I could make decisions that could really F it up. And so when someone who seems really competent comes in and says, I have a 12-step plan for you, for your life, the majority of us, until you learn this kind of part of you, the majority of us will say in that situation, oh my God, thank you. 12-step plan. All right, here we go. And so the reality is that even though power structures do use religion, certainly, you know, we can look at something like slavery that was supported by the very Bible itself. I think there's a deeper reality that we create power structures, we create leaders, we create gurus, we crave authority sometimes because life is scary and it's gray and we don't know what the hell we're doing as humans. Like, it's so hard to just be a human that yes. when someone who seems like they have their shit together says, I can help you, we're just really drawn to that because it's hard. It's hard to be a human. There's an analogy that if you give someone, if you say that you have to pick one salad dressing and you can eat that salad dressing for the rest of your life and you have 500 choices, that's actually really hard. That's really overwhelming. But if a best friend says, I've tried all of these, here's four that I think you'll really love, we actually really appreciate that. That actually helps because we have this fear of too much freedom. So the answer is yes, power structures use religion, but there's a deeper reality that we create power structures because we fear too much freedom.
Okay, I am vibing with everything you just said right now, mainly around the choices and also having someone hand us, you know, the 12 steps or the four simple ways or the five mm-hmm. whatevers. When I was newly into my spiritual awakening, I feel like I was seeking that. I was looking for that. You know, I knew I wasn't going to do this. I wasn't, you know, considering myself a Christian anymore, but I just didn't know what to do with my life. And so it was really around the personal development where I was seeing a lot of this until I really sat with all of it. And I'm just like, I just don't understand why this just is not feeling right for me. And I realized that it's not for me. And I just haven't mm-hmm. found my thing yet. And someone else's thing is not necessarily going to be my thing. But thank you for confirming just my thought. And also talking about the four, you said the four existential crises. That
or existential fears.
Mm-hmm. Fears, yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Lauren, I have more, but what do you think so far?
Yeah, I had never heard that theory before, and freedom makes so much sense. And it's interesting, you know, being an American, because there is so much obsession around freedom, and especially among those who still want to control other people. So it's very interesting to be yelling freedom, but also to like be so uncomfortable seeing people live outside, say, the gender binary, for instance, or the sexual binary or whatever it might be. So putting it within that context and really on the same level as like the fear of death makes a lot of sense. And it actually gives me a little bit more compassion and empathy for people who just seem to have such like a twisted idea of what freedom is and might mean for sure. themselves and other people. So I love this conversation. I'd love to go into, I guess, New Age spirituality, because, okay, people might grow up in religion and then deconstruct that. And like Rashida was talking about, and me too, we begin this like seeking, I think, maybe for something else to fill the hole or for something that feels more authentic, more connecting. And then I think many of us come to find out on this journey that there are a lot of similar trappings in New Age spirituality as there are within more established religions. So I'd love to know, what do you see there, Britt? What are these like spiritual trappings that you've come across?
Yeah, it's a great question and one that I get a lot of heat for. I most of my time on social media is on TikTok, and there is a sense on TikTok that you can critique religion, and even religious people will know that religion has caused some problems, and they're aware of, you know, that yes, religion, you know, has caused some of these problems, but, you know, they consider it to be an overall net good. One of the problems with the other side of that coin is on the New Age spirituality side, it's not as maybe visible what some of these traps are like it is in religion. So, and this goes to why the occult world is having problems with the other side of the coin. So religion has problems because it's too hierarchical, it's too authoritarian. The box that you try to fit, you know, they're trying to fit you in is too constricting for many people. But when you swing to the other side and say, I'm just doing intuition, I'm just doing paganism or Wiccan or whatever you're doing, the problem with the other side of that coin is that you actually don't have enough mentorship. You don't have enough maybe not hierarchy, but at least wise voices that are kind of checking ego, that kind of thing. And so unchecked intuition can often become just your ego having a place to play without any checks or balances at all. And so people can get lost in that space very easily. And the Christianity to witch pipeline is a straight line. And so what we're seeing is that people will deconstruct from Christianity for various valid reasons. But if you don't deconstruct fully, what happens is the same tendencies you had in religion. Your brain's going to want to just find a new belief that's going to fit that same brain pattern that you have before. So if you felt very special as a Christian because, or a Jew or a Mormon, because you know, every religion is God's special tribe if you're that religion. And so if you felt very special, which is one of the kind of spiritual traps of feeling like you are, you know, God's special or the universe's special child. If you felt that way in religion, if you haven't fully deconstructed that, then you're going to go into New Age spirituality and say things like, I was born with my third eye open and I have magical powers and I can manipulate energy and I am a special kind of empath and I'm a medium because I've been blessed with these powers kind of thing. And not to say that people don't have gifts or people aren't unique or people aren't just beautiful in the expression of what they are. But there's a kind of drug that happens there where you get to feel better than everyone else, that you, it's kind of in your blind spot. Same thing with something like manifesting. So for example, a lot of what we do in religion is to try to order chaos so that we don't feel so scared all the time. So we're praying all the time because it's this ritual that we do to be able to feel like we have some control in a universe that is so random and chaotic and terrible things happen all the time. And if you don't sit with making peace with what you don't know and chaos and be uncomfortable and sit with that, then when you go to the New Age side, you start playing manifesting games where you're trying to match your frequency to the universe. And again, and the universe becomes then this genie that gives you what you want if you're kind of in the right frequency. And if you don't get what you want, then you weren't aligned. And it becomes prosperity gospel. But instead of it being in Christianity prosperity gospel where, you know, give your money and time to Jesus and your business will become wealthy, you're doing that same thing but with the universe and with this kind of vague pseudoscience around vibration and energy. Not that there isn't energy, but energy is the word where you can put in any belief that you have about the universe in the New Age world, because it's just that's where you can kind of hide a lot of truth claims about reality that we just don't know yet. It doesn't mean that you're wrong. It just means that we don't know yet. So if we don't actually face the things that cause religion and cause superstition and cause kind of some of the problems with religion, what ends up happening is we leave religion. We have the same brain patterns as before, and we just find things in New Age spirituality that replace those things. And so we actually haven't deconstructed religion. We've really just switched religions. And now astrology is your religion. And now you're judging people based on their sign. And just like you used to judge people in Christianity and you say, oh, I don't F around with Aries people. Sorry. And it's like, well, that's pretty judgmental. So really, deconstruction is a bigger process than just leaving a church. Deconstruction is really seeing what are the fears and desires subconsciously that drive our desire for superstitions and religions and cult leaders and believing in things that we just can't prove yet. Why does that have to be true? Why are we clinging to that? And it's because of all these things that are going on in our subconscious that we can actually face directly so that we don't have to just leave religion to jump into a new religion where we're essentially doing the same thing.
Thank you for...
That was a lot. I just dumped a lot.
Yeah, that was a lot. But that was a lot. For sharing that, Lorne and I are like nodding and laughing and like agreeing and all the things. I did have, I normally don't write down a question, but I did, and you started answering that. I said, how do you fully deconstruct? And you were saying we have to look at the fears and desires subconsciously that drive these things. How does one do that? If someone's listening to this right now and they're like, okay, this makes sense. I can see myself and how I have done that and how I've just like jumped sides, you know, what is the work that I need to do before I come back to this thing that I thought I felt aligned in?
Yeah. So a great place to start is an exercise I like to do where you where I ask you how many species of elephant are there? And you just kind of guess. And then I ask you, you know, like, how sure are you that is right? And then I give you the correct answer, which I don't even know. I actually should use one where I actually know the answer. And for that, if you guess 20 and there's 3 or 5 or something like that, it's like, oh, I didn't know that. How lovely. I got to learn something new today. And that's really how we should be about truth. Because I think it was Neil deGrasse Tyson who said they tried to quantify how much we know as humans. And so we kind of mapped out what we know and the questions that we're asking. And we know about 4% of what we know and 0% of what we don't know. Our limitations for understanding what's going on as far as ultimate reality are extremely limited, which means that we should be holding to truth fairly lightly, because when we look at human history, we've just always been wrong. Whatever our theory is for about what's going on in the world, what's happening at a metaphysical level, 100% of the time we've always been wrong. So I think that should give us a little intellectual humility. And so if you are in a place where you're using a tool, and if you find out that you're wrong, it feels about the same as being wrong about elephants, then that feels a little bit safe. You're using this as a tool or as a theory, seems to be okay. Now, if you find out something and it's devastating to your identity, to something going like learning that you're wrong in something is actually devastating, it means that it's covering a fear or a subconscious desire or a trauma or something like that, and it's worth digging into. So if you're wrong about Reiki, or you're wrong about astrology, or you're wrong about tarot, or you're wrong about some of your claims around some of these things, if that's devastating to you, it means that you're using it for something that you psychologically need. Maybe that's how you're feeling safety. Like doing astrology helps you feel like you can predict the future a little bit, or at least have really good hindsight bias on the past. And that maybe makes you calm down your anxiety about the world being kind of chaotic. And so if you're wrong about astrology, that's going to be really painful. That's going to really hurt you. And that means that that astrology belief is actually covering a fear that you have. Like you have not faced your fear of just sitting with, chaos a little bit and making peace with it, making peace that we don't know a lot of things. So that's a good test I like to start with. How loosely are you holding on to your beliefs? Are you able to change your mind? Are you able to be excited to learn new things? Or are you really sure that this has to be true? And if it has to be true, we're clinging. And if we're clinging, it's because there's a reason under that. And as a spiritual director, that's what I would do with a client. I never tell a client what I think is true or real. That's really spiritually unethical to do. That's not my place to do. Sometimes people will ask me my opinion in a spiritual direction session. And really, I try to turn that back on them and say, why are you asking me? And it's usually because I want an authority to tell me, right? Mm. And I don't want to play that game. So usually I really turn that back to the client and say, why does this thing need to be true? Why are you asking my opinion on this? Why do you need to know this thing? Instead of, can we make peace with not knowing? Can we make peace with chaos? Can we make peace with randomness? Can we make peace? And that's how you get that eye in the storm kind of sense of being, where you're not clinging to things anymore because you've made peace with death. You've made peace with meaninglessness. You've made peace with isolation. You've made peace with some of these monsters that lurk in our subconscious. So really it's digging into, what do you believe and why do you need it to be true? and what is lurking underneath that that probably could be faced directly. Then once we face those fears directly, then we can go into near-death experiences because that's super interesting to you. Great, let's dig into that. You're finding that interesting. But what happens is Christians go right from Christianity to near-death experiences. Why are they doing that? They're trying to find a reason to not face their fear of death. They're trying to find a new belief that did what Christianity did for them when it comes to death. And my approach is, let's face death directly. Let's sit with that. Let's die a little bit and make peace with death being a part of life. And then when we've faced that monster and we're not kind of clinging, when we've made peace with that particular monster, then let's go and study near-death experiences and see what's going on there and see if we can make heads or tails of it, because then we don't need anything to be true. We can just go in that space to play, to explore, to be curious, and that tends to be a lot healthier for us, that approach, I think.
Yeah, what I'm feeling like how your approach is on the front end is a very masculine approach, i.e. let's do the work, let's do the homework, let's really like look at this for what it is, be open to like what may come up and like really, you know, figure this out to see why you need this. And then we step into more of the feminine approach of being, just being allowing, receiving, not really letting it sway you either way. And that's just kind of how I'm feeling what you're talking about. But I really do like that process because I think a lot of us leave the religion because it doesn't feel good for us anymore. It doesn't make sense for us anymore. And because we have those neural pathways that you were talking about, our brain is still looking for that path to kind of that connection that we had before. We do find ourselves in other things. And I like when you talked about, you know, it's not that you don't believe in these things like near-death experience. It's not that you don't think that they have a place. It's more so like, let's uncover what's already inside of us first before we add on these layers of quote unquote identity. You know, I'm a past life regression therapist, but can you truly be that? Can you really be that without really uncovering the truth of who you are first, seeing all those shadows, addressing those shadows, and then putting that, I don't know, that hat on in a way, and then sharing that with the world, also sharing it to people who have also done that inner work, looking at the shadows, and they can take it how they want to, but they're not taking it for gospel.
Yeah, that the past life regression therapist is such a beautiful example for what I'm talking about, because is it possible that we have past lives and that we can tap into, like, we know so little about reality, it's totally possible. So when someone hears that I'm a little bit more science driven or I'm an atheist, people will think that, oh, you just think that science explains everything. And it's like, no, it's the opposite. Like we are admitting how little we know and mm-hmm. we're having some intellectual humility about it. But what happens with the past life regression therapists and some of the gatherings that they do is that 100% of them believe that they are Cleopatra in a previous life. And no one, there cannot be that many Cleopatras. You were probably just a slave. Like, statistically, what's interesting when you look at the statistics of people who claim that they've tapped into their past life, the one that comes up the most is Napoleon and Cleopatra. And it's like, statistically, there's something there where, like, we want to be really special. And it, like you said, Rashida, if you don't dig into your shadow work and why you need to feel that way and what's driving that kind of ego place or that shadow place, where you have to feel like you are extra special in order to have value, then these places are really being driven by your ego, but there's nothing to call you out on that. And so there's this party, for example, where people who are past life, people who work in past lives, it's called Come As You Were. So you come as one of your previous selves. And I kid you not, there will be 40 Cleopatras. And it just starts to get a little bit off track there of like, I think we're leaving what was helpful about this therapy. And we're now moving into these places where, again, it's like religion. There's a lot of faith and a lot of ego involved with what's going on, but nobody can call it out because it's a little bit more subtle than religion. And so that's one of the fears that I have for the New Age side. And I love that you bring out the masculine and feminine, because there is something really powerful when you get to the end of the hero's journey where you have the balance of, or sorry, the heroine's journey. The end of the heroine's journey is the balance between masculine and feminine. And I really find that to be the place that I personally have found the most wholeness, where my brain is online. I can think analytically about things. I can use my philosophy background. I can look at statistics and data. And I also have a lot of experience with female mystics and this embodiment and the resonances, because one of the best ways to get out of nihilism is to really follow the resonances in your body about what really makes you excited about being alive and how we lean into that. But when it's just analytic, you can get to very nihilistic places. And if it's just body, like you are only in your body and your mind, and that checks and balances, that kind of masculine side is totally turned off, you can also get lost into spaces where we all know someone who's kind of lost in their own worldview around crystals and manifesting and energy. And they're a little bit lost down that rabbit hole. And there's nothing really you can do because they're so fully invested in their intuition. They have no check or balance on it. And so really for me, secular spirituality has been the place where I can fully lean into embodied spirituality that we get more from the feminine side. And also keep my brain online and not have to turn that off, because that's part of me too.
Yeah. I mean, you're really speaking to like being whole. Because I know when I first stepped into spirituality, you know, it was more of, you need to really be in your feminine, you know, the reason why X, Y, and Z is because we're too masculine, our society's too masculine, this and that. And, you know, I know Lauren and I have talked a lot about how we need both, you know, we need both and all of it. And honestly, sometimes, yes, there's a separation because we need to have our categories as human beings. But when we look at the world around us, like it is all and everything. It is not black nor white. It is everything. And so is the masculine and feminine. And I feel like having the distinction is great because, like I said, we need to like be able to identify things. But it's really, in my opinion, spirituality is about just bringing it all together and figuring out what that is for you, what flavor that is for you. So I really like how you talked about that, Brittany. Lauren, I'm going to step back again because I can keep going.
Yeah, sure. I would like to. Okay. There are a couple subjects I wanted to bring up. One of them has to do with the masculine and feminine, and it has to do with And I'll say, when Rashida and I have conversations, when I'm writing about masculine and feminine, it's certainly not about men versus women.
Yes.
Or like fitting into any type of like specific gender roles or binary or anything like that. But we do speak about it in terms of like spiritual connection, for sure. You had a reel that I loved. And it was... it's been a few weeks, I think, since I watched it, but you had a picture of a mother who had like planned this birthday party for their child.
Oh, yeah.
And you were comparing and contrasting that to, I think, more masculine expressions of spirituality as we've learned them, meditation, for instance, and saying like, why isn't this considered spiritual? This mother has spent weeks like figuring out exactly what their child wants. And essentially what they're doing in creating this birthday party is embodying love. So I'd love to speak more to, I guess these were the two subjects I wanted to bring up, but more of like, what are these, and we don't have to call it feminine necessarily, but what are these like embodied expressions of spirituality in your opinion? And how do we connect with spirituality in the ordinary, because that's also a lot of your messaging that I really connect with.
Yeah, that's a big topic and one that I spend a lot of time time talking about. So like you, when I talk about masculine and feminine, I am in no way talking about gender, even though there may be some kind of bell curve there statistically. It's if anything, that would be a loose one. For example, my mother expresses much more qualities that we have called the masculine, and my father expresses qualities that more commonly we call feminine. And really, these are just the traits and qualities that we have kind of categorized in this way. And so what happens is, in religion, only men have written scripture. And so because of that, and not just men, a very particular kind of men, this is a priest class man who is being supported by the community. So they're not working, they're not running families, they're certainly not doing birthday parties. And these are particular kinds of men that have written scripture. And so it's in all the obvious ways, especially the Abrahamic religions, but even Buddhism and the Eastern religions are patriarchal. Some people think that Buddhism escapes this somehow, but we have early Buddhist texts that talk about how deceit is like excrement and women are full of deceit, things like this, or women are roadblocks to enlightenment, or even just the pattern of Buddha abandoning his wife and child to go sit under the Bodhi tree to receive enlightenment. Like, okay, someone was taking care of that child while you got to sit under that tree and become enlightened. And what's, you know, her story? What would she think about your enlightenment as she's caring for this child? So religion has only been, you know, since agriculture. You know, we can talk about religion before then, which was much more plural and matriarchal and healthy in many ways because of that. But since agriculture, religion has been really written by priest class men. But then also, when you leave religion and go into the world of spirituality, the world of spiritual gurus, that is also dominated by men. And so what happens is, even if it's subconscious, even if it's not meant to be controlling, you know, because even if these are well-intentioned men, it's only getting one side of the conversation. And so what you'll see, that post that I did that you're talking about, is if a man goes to India for 3 weeks and sits on a mat and thinks about loving people, we say, oh my God, what a spiritual man. Give this man a microphone. Give this man a platform. He's so amazing, right? And yet the woman who is for weeks planning the birthday party, asking her daughter her favorite color, planning this moment where this child feels really loved and seen, that's not considered, like, we're barely calling that emotional labor. We haven't even begun to call that spiritual. And the man who's on his mat in India doing shadow work by himself, which is like a vacation, like, you guys, you know, you have young children, like, that is a vacation for a young mother. And yet we will praise that all day long. But the woman who gets up in the middle of the night and your brain is on fire and you're thinking intrusive thoughts and you really want to go back to bed and be asleep and you choose love in that moment by cleaning diarrhea off of the floor, and we don't call that spiritual. We don't call that ego work. We don't call that shadow work. We just call that women's work. We don't even think that it's in the spiritual realm at all. And yet it's what that man was doing in India by himself on retreat, on vacation, and she's doing it in real life, and we're not calling it spiritual. And so the reason that happens is because women's spirituality historically has been embodied, which means it's not about jumping through hoops of rituals that you have to wake up at. The ice bath bros in the spiritual world will say, yes, be spiritual, wake up at 5 a.m. and do your ice bath, and then ground at 6 a.m. and spend half an hour getting sunlight in the morning. And then, you know, they have this whole list of things that they're doing that are spiritual. And we say, oh my God, that guy is so spiritual. But women, when you wake up in the morning, you are adjusting to the people around you. You don't wake up at 5 a.m. every day and go, like, you were up all night with a sick kid, or you have a kid in your bed, or your kid just tells you that he has a project due that day and didn't tell you, and now you're doing a science fair early in the morning. And so spirituality has never been written for women who are adjusting to people around them, because women are relational. another thing that we see is that even the term enlightenment has this very masculine baggage to it, not baggage, but lean to it, because it's really about enlightenment of the self. And what I find with women is that so often transcending ego happens in relationship, because maybe you're the first person in the relationship to say, I'm going to say sorry for my piece, even mm-hmm. though I'm hurt. That is transcending your ego. But do we call that enlightenment? No, we don't call that enlightenment. We just call, like, maybe in some spaces we'll call that emotional labor. But do we call that spiritual ego work, that you're the first person to want to reconcile and be doing the mental labor to be able to reconcile when you're in relationship? We don't call that spiritual at all. So for me, a huge part of my journey was really being in the masculine when I was younger, really leaning into philosophy, theology. These are very male dominated spaces. And then, like you're saying, Rashida, where, you know, you try a lot of these things and you wonder why it's not resonating with you. And 9 times out of 10, when I ask a woman what her spiritual practice is, she says, I try to meditate, but my kids are too crazy, and so I don't have a spiritual practice. Not recognizing that female spirituality, embodied spirituality, spirituality in relationships, spirituality on the move, doing a ritual, which is creating a meal for your family and ritualistically wiping the counter the way that you always do it. We have never called that spiritual, because men have always defined religion and spirituality. So uncovering that for me was so deeply healing, and telling women some of these messages so that they don't feel like they're not spiritual, because it doesn't fit these kind of male spirituality rituals that, you know, you're supposed to do, has been really freeing for me. And I've seen a lot of women really change how they see themselves by saying, actually, what you did last night in the middle of the night was some of the deepest and hardest shadow work or ego work you can do. And that was deeply spiritual. And nobody has told them that. And that's been a gift that I really love to be able to receive from women, but also give back to women. I just did a really big rant there because it's super important to me.
No, it is so important. And I think, you know, Lauren and I have been together since 21, 22. I can't remember. Time is always blurring together in my life with 2 children. But we've come to feel this way deeply, you know, a lot. And not seeing and not hearing, like you said, other women even talking about this, sharing about this. Because we are, you know, supposed to meditate, because that's what spirituality is. We are supposed to just sit quietly and, you know, allow our thoughts to pass. And sometimes, like, when you have a screaming baby, or you're dealing with a cesarean wound, or you're doing all of these things, like, you can't, it just doesn't fit. And so you also are finding yourself outside of your spirituality and having someone say no, like, you dealing with this crying baby, and you showing it love and your self-love in this moment, while, you know, maybe your partner's off working, or you're the one that gets up every single night at 3 a.m. because that's just how it has to be at this point. That is deeply spiritual. You know, this is really hard work that you're doing, and, you know, show yourself love for that. We don't see that, and we don't hear that. I know after my second baby, I thought I had it all figured out after my first, and then my second one came, and I just did not know. I felt like I was losing my spirituality again. I just felt like I wasn't connected. I wasn't just there. And luckily I had someone like Lauren to kind of help me through that time, but we don't hear that enough. And I'm getting a little emotional because it just feels so good to hear that, for someone to, like, say, no, your life, what you're doing, one, is super important, but it matters. And it not only matters to your children, but to your spiritual self as well. So thank you for going on that rant. I was, like, nodding and agreeing the entire time, because it's so resonant. Lauren, I know this is your question, so we're going to go back to you.
No, I loved listening to the quote unquote rant too. And Brittany, you could have kept going, and I am all ears for sure.
Yes.
Because these are absolutely the same conclusions that I've been coming to. You know, pre-children, I had hours, honestly, to spend on my spiritual practice and considering philosophy, and I got to take the cool yoga vacations and things like that. But honestly, I don't want to say it meant nothing, but the work that I'm doing now, which is 24/7 caretaking plus spiritual work and stuff, it just means so much more in action.
Mm.
It's one thing to talk about non-harm. That's like one of the number one principle in yoga. And it's a whole other thing to experience it and to be challenged constantly and to step up to the plate and to have the awareness of it, which is why I think like having this sense of balance, like you were talking about, hold on, Gemma, like the masculine might be like the knowledge of the philosophy, right? And then the feminine is like, how are we actually applying it and embodying it and to put that together? Because we can be, I don't know, caretaking as a form of worship, let's say, but not be aware of it. And I think the awareness of it adds a sense of depth and appreciation for ourselves that maybe we wouldn't feel otherwise. Sorry. I'll give you your microphone when we're done. So speaking of caretaking, it's about time for me to shift gears again. And Brittany, I know your time is really valuable. So we would love to wrap up this conversation just by asking, where can people buy your book? One, where can they find out more about your work? And if there is anything else that you would like to share with us right now?
Yeah, just I want to follow up on your thought before I wrap up of not only is it so healing for women to be told that what they're doing is hard and valuable and spiritual in a way that they've never been told before, but there's also so much wisdom that we're lacking by women not sharing everything that they're learning. Because like you, before I had kids, I had a full life and I did many spiritual and amazing things. And yet I didn't fully meet my shadow until I became a mother or in relationship when someone has a mirror to the parts of me that I don't want to see. And so for me, having a long-term relationship has been the deepest shadow work that I've done. And also becoming a mother, that is when I really met my shadow, because one of my favorite lines is, before you have children, you get to live under the illusion that you're a good person. And then you become a mother. And there were times that if my husband took my kids out, I would have fantasies about them getting in a car wreck so that I could just get some sleep. And I didn't know I had that part of me in me, because before I would have said like, oh, I'm a pacifist and I'm, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I really met my shadow in the shame that I felt for some of my resentments that come in relationship. And so not only are we missing women realizing what they're doing is hard and spiritual, but we're also missing that only the men who sit on the mats, who talk about shadow work and maybe give you a workbook or something like that, that tends to be the dominant voice in this space. And yet the women who are doing what I think is the hardest shadow work, because you're going to be thinking the hardest thoughts, you're going to have the most intrusive thoughts. When we talk about something like postpartum rage, we didn't know how many women, it's more than 50% will, not everyone gets postpartum depression, but that rage towards members of your family where you just want to scream, or maybe you even feel like being violent. We have a whole society of women who have faced this and come out the other side and tried to choose love in that moment. That is incredibly hard shadow work. And yet we are missing all of that wisdom in the conversation, because these women don't even know that they deserve a microphone for what they just did. And that hurts everyone. And so what we have to remember in this conversation about the feminine and embodied spirituality is that this isn't man-hating. This isn't saying that the meditation retreats don't have value, or the ayahuasca trips, or the ice baths, or, you know, that whole side of things. It's saying that by missing half of this conversation and all of the wisdom that is trapped in that side of the conversation, it hurts everyone. So we found this, for example, with the deaf community. We put subtitles on TVs and on phones and social media, particularly for deaf people, and then found that almost everyone now watches things with subtitles because it helped everybody. And I think it's going to be the same thing for adding the feminine voice. It gives more options for what spirituality looks like, for what spiritual paths look like, for what listening to your body and your own inner voice and really getting into your body versus kind of the history of men in spirituality, which is transcending the body. That has not only blessed me as a woman, but those conversations have also helped my husband claim his own spiritual path. And so it really is a message for everyone, not just for women, because it just adds more options and more wisdom and more paths, and more of your leaning into your authentic spiritual journey. Which in the end helps everyone, men and women and anyone on, you know, the gender spectrum. And so that's something to keep in mind, that this isn't about gender wars or who's doing spirituality right. It's that by missing this entire half of the conversation, it's actually hurt everyone. So if you want to learn more, my taglines are No Nonsense Spirituality on TikTok and Instagram. I have a website, nononsensespirituality.com. I have courses on there. If you really liked that feminist rant, I have a very long conversation about the history of matriarchy and patriarchy and how to, I think, de-patriarchy your spirituality. I have a whole course on that, and religious deconstruction, nihilism. I have some courses on my website. And then I also have my book, No Nonsense Spirituality, All the Tools No Faith Required, that's available on Amazon and also Kindle. And I loved being here today.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I definitely want to look into the courses. And we just want to also ask you if you'll be our bestie.
I'll be your bestie. I had a heck of a time.
Thank you so much. I mean, I could have kept going, but you know.
Yeah.
We can't do that. But thank you so much for being here, Britt. We really appreciated all the wisdom you shared and really just setting the stage for us to have these conversations and really looking at that other half that you were talking about, affirming some things that I think a lot of us really, really feel deeply. We just don't know how to voice. And Lauren, thank you so much for finding Brittany. I guess we need to thank the Instagram algorithm, right? Because this has been amazing. Besties, thank you so much for tuning in. Be sure to follow Britt if what she said resonated with you. And we'd love to continue the conversation on our page. Feel free to reach out and message us. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thank you.
Thanks, ladies.
Thank you so much for joining us for this incredible episode. If you loved it, don't forget to subscribe, leave a review, and tell all your besties about us.
You can also connect with us on Instagram at Your Spiritual Besties Podcast. And be sure to say hello and share your thoughts about the episode. Love you, bestie. Talk soon.